Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
The AI race heats up as Meta works on a powerful new system to rival OpenAI. President Biden makes a historic visit to Vietnam, saying he isn't looking to contain China. And U.S. voters are more upbeat about the economy, but who should take the credit?
So there's a pretty strong sense out there that the president hasn't really done a very good job on the economy, even as there's a sense that the economy is improving.
It's Monday, September 11th. I'm Keith Collins for The Wall Street Journal. And here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. And we begin with the race to develop artificial intelligence as Meta has set its sights on OpenAI. We're exclusively reporting how the parent of Facebook and Instagram is working on a new AI system intended to be as powerful as the most advanced model offered by OpenAI, the Microsoft-backed startup that created ChatGPT. Nhuli Purnell is a Journal Tech reporter, and he joins me now. Nhuli, our colleagues have gotten this great insight into Meta's AI plans. What else do we know?
Yeah, great scoop indeed by Deepa and Tom. It would represent a big jump in the capability of Meta's AI offerings. It would be several times more powerful than Llama 2, which was the large language model, or LLM, that came out a few months ago. And it's the first work we're seeing of a group formed by Facebook chief executive Mark Zuckerberg to really speed up the development of generative AI systems that the company can offer. And they want to start training this system early next year.
Meta has been racing to close the gap with competitors such as Microsoft-backed OpenAI and Google. Will it be able to?
The indications are they would still be a little bit behind some of these rival services. So Meta hopes it would be about as capable as GPT-4, which was the AI system out from OpenAI in March. And we understand that it would come out after the new LLM from Google, Gemini. So Meta is working quickly to accelerate their efforts, but they might still be behind some of these other big rivals, which have a lot of resources and a big head start in many ways.
There are several legal concerns around these powerful AI models, with Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg expected to address just that, along with a group of top tech executives in a summit organized by Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer on Wednesday. The battle to dominate EVs is also heating up, with the U.S. reportedly in talks with Saudi Arabia to secure production-critical metals in Africa. It comes as the White House tries to curb China's dominance in the EV supply chain, and as Saudi Arabia looks to buy $15 billion in global mining stakes. Currently, Chinese companies refine three-quarters of the world's cobalt supply and produce around 70% of the world's lithium-ion batteries. But Journal Metals and Mining reporter Julie Steinberg says Saudi Arabia can play a key role in helping the U.S. catch up with China.
Saudi Arabia has the financial firepower that the U.S. needs, first of all, to invest in billions of dollars worth of projects. So that's a help. Secondly, Saudi Arabia is more likely to be able to invest in mining assets in African countries that the U.S. might be more hesitant about. Not to mention, the kingdom is also less bound by environmental, social, and governance concerns that crimp other investors' ability to deploy capital there.
The U.S. and Vietnam have announced a comprehensive strategic partnership, putting Washington on the same level as Russia and China in the eyes of Hanoi. While the new status is symbolic, it is aimed at promoting Vietnam as a dependable location for U.S. manufacturing operations overseas. And it comes as both countries look to counterbalance what they see as a threat posed by China. Here's President Biden speaking in Vietnam last night.
One of the things that is going on now is China's beginning to change some of the rules of the game in terms of trade and other issues. And so really what this trip is about, it was less about containing China. I don't want to contain China. I just want to make sure we have a relationship with China that is on the up and up, squared away, everybody knows what it's all about. And one of the ways you do that is you make sure that we are talking about the same things.
The visit comes on the heels of Biden's trip to India for the Group of 20 summit. There, Biden and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi announced a plan to develop a network of railways and sea routes as part of a new economic corridor that they hope can counter China's dominant role in the global south. Coming up, Americans are feeling more positive about the economy, but they disagree over who should get the credit, Democrats or Republicans. More on what that means for next year's election after the break.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Our recruiting professionals utilize our proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
American voters say the economy is looking up. According to a new Wall Street Journal poll, positive perceptions about the state of the economy are on the rise, helped along by easing inflation. But as for whether President Biden deserves credit for how things are going, that's another story. Our Luke Vargas spoke to Journal DC reporter David Harrison about the poll a little over a year out from the presidential election. Let's take a listen.
David, tell us, how significant is this recent shift in economic sentiment that our polling is picking up on?
Yeah, I'd say it's pretty significant. We've seen a real sort of uptick in people's attitudes towards the economy. So, for instance, in our poll, Democrats and independents who say that the economy is either in excellent or good condition went up by 9 percentage points for both groups, which is a pretty big shift. Republicans kind of stayed relatively flat, but that's to be expected when you have a Democratic administration. And that's sort of consistent with what other polls are showing, too. The Michigan Survey of Consumers, which had shown a real sharp sort of decline in people's attitudes last year and earlier this year, has now kind of picked up considerably. So we're definitely at a moment where people are feeling a little more optimistic.
And despite that shift, though, the president doesn't seem to be getting credit for what's changed.
Yeah, that's right. That's a little surprising. Usually presidents get the credit or the blame for whatever goes on in the economy, whether they deserve it or not. But in this case, there's a bit of a split between how people feel about the economy and how they feel about the president's handling of it. So in our poll, we found 63% of voters disapprove of how he's handled inflation, and 3 in 5 disapprove of how he's handled the economy overall. So there's a pretty strong sense out there that the president hasn't really done a very good job on the economy, even as there's a sense that the economy is improving.
I imagine as the presidential campaign heats up, we're going to see Republicans arguing that the administration's policies in some way contributed to the recent economic difficulties we've seen, inflation, the like, while Biden and fellow Democrats are going to say their policies have improved things. I mean, based on this polling, David, can we see which arguments voters are likely to be most receptive to?
Sure, yeah. We're going to hear two different stories, basically, that are going to be told. So Biden and his team are going to say, the economy is doing better. We inherited an economy that was not doing so well. We were in the depths of COVID. We didn't have a recession, which economists had predicted. Labor market's strong. Wages are rising. Inflation is falling. We're going to get this sort of upbeat message from Biden, all of which is like objectively true. And then on the other hand, we're going to get from Republicans, well, spending is out of control. The Biden sort of fiscal package of injecting sort of trillions of dollars into the economy to prop it up during the pandemic has triggered this wave of inflation. So there's a sense we've been getting more and more in American elections that Democrats and Republicans tend to live on different planets. And that's definitely coming through.
Regardless of the explanations of what's going on in the economy, David, how does that line up with what we're actually seeing?
Yeah, so the economy right now, according to all the data that we're getting, is in fact in pretty good shape. The labor market is strong. Inflation has come down quite rapidly. It's just a touch over 3% last month, which is down from around 9% a year ago. So things are improving, but the risk of recession is still there, right? We haven't had one yet. You know, economists are now a little more optimistic and they see a little more odds of a so-called soft landing, but the risk is still out there. And so if we do have a recession in the next few months before the election, all this changes and voters will all of a sudden pay much closer attention to the economy, and the economy will be a much bigger driver of turnout and people's perceptions.
And finally, in terms of where this all nets out, the old saying is when it comes to what motivates voters in an election, it's, quote, the economy, stupid. I think we've taken it for granted in this chat, maybe, David, that that remains the case. Is it, or are there more issues at play here?
You're right that the economy usually is the sort of driving preoccupation of voters in these elections, and that's definitely the case for Republicans. 36% of them cited the economy, and 10% cited inflation as sort of their main issue. Democrats, not so much. Only 12% of them said the economy was their top issue, and 3% said inflation was most important. Among Democrats, it seems abortion is really one of the big drivers in terms of this election. 15% said abortion was and access to abortion was the most important issue here. So we're going to see Republicans focusing more on sort of inflation, on the economy. Democrats will have this sense that we're all right on that front, and we can focus on other things such as more social issues.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter David Harrison in Washington. David, thank you so much.
Of course, thank you.
Last week, we reported on how the cost of health insurance is soaring. And today, analysis by the Wall Street Journal has found insurers are also charging significantly inflated prices for generic drugs. Generics are relatively inexpensive options at the pharmacy, but pricing data from Cigna and CVS showed the cost was at least 24 times higher than what the generic drugs makers charge. Health researchers and industry officials say that the very companies that are supposed to keep a lid on drug spending can maximize their profits by marking up the prices. Cigna and CVS say that the prices vary by pharmacy and location, and that most patients end up paying less out of pocket through their insurance than they would buying the drugs at lower cash prices offered by low-cost pharmacies. We're exclusively reporting that grocery delivery company Instacart is targeting a much-diminished valuation in its upcoming IPO. The company is aiming for a range from $8.6 to $9.3 billion, a fraction of the $39 billion valuation from 2 years ago, reflecting reduced investor enthusiasm for private growth companies. Instacart is expected to begin marketing its long-anticipated IPO as early as today. Its plans could still change, and it is possible the range could move around as the company receives feedback during the roadshow. We've also learned of a major tie-up between two U.S. snack makers. Hostess, the owner of Twinkies and several other brands, is near a sale to jelly maker J.M. Smucker, which is also home to Jif Peanut Butter and Folgers Coffee. The deal would likely be valued around $4 billion and could be announced as soon as today, assuming the talks don't hit a last-minute snag, according to people familiar with the matter. For Hostess, a sale would cap off a remarkable turnaround after going through two Chapter 11 bankruptcies. U.S. retail giant Walmart is doubling down in Africa after earlier investments on the continent tanked. More than a decade ago, Walmart spent $2.4 billion to buy a controlling stake in South African retailer Massmart. However, the company is yet to cash in. Nevertheless, Walmart is now buying the 47% of Massmart that it didn't already own at a fraction of the price for the initial stake. Our Africa corporate reporter Alexandra Wexler explains why Walmart is going all in.
So South Africa is actually quite a mature retail market. It's the most developed economy on the continent. So there is a much higher penetration here of, say, credit cards than there is in the rest of Africa. Online e-commerce retail is still relatively new. It's not super popular. So that is a place where they definitely could get a foothold in and really take control and grow there. And then also the rest of Africa is still largely a wide open playing field. So that's something else they can use South Africa as kind of a beachhead into the rest of the continent.
And Novak Djokovic won his fourth U.S. Open late Sunday, defeating number 3 seed Daniil Medvedev of Russia. It was the 24th major title for Djokovic, tying him for the all-time record for men or women held by Australia's Margaret Court. The victory came a day after 19-year-old American Coco Gauff won her first major title, beating Aryna Sabalenka of Belarus in the women's final. Gauff was the first American teen to reach a U.S. Open final since Serena Williams in 2001. And finally, if you've changed jobs in the past few years, you probably expected to get a hefty bump in pay. But now the job market is cooling, businesses are getting more cautious, and workers are finding pay for new hires is starting to shrivel. Among postings for more than 20,000 job titles on ZipRecruiter this year, the average pay for most roles has fallen from last year. Our reporter Taping Chen told the Wall Street Journal's Your Money Briefing podcast that workers switching to a new job have to reset their pay expectations.
If you were job hunting a year and a half ago, you were getting plied in some cases with multiple offers. You had a lot more leverage. And at this point, the job seekers that we've been talking to this year, I mean, it's a real turnaround. And not only are you scrapping much more to even get an interview or any kind of response to your applications, if you are able to get to the negotiating stage and to talk pay, it's absolutely a time when expectations are being tempered and candidates are feeling that really strongly now.
You can hear more from Taping on Your Money Briefing, wherever you get your podcasts. And that is What's News for Monday morning. Today's show is produced by Kate Bullivant and Mohsen Ali. Our supervising producer is Sandra Kilhoff, and I'm Keith Collins for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back tonight with a new show. Thanks for listening.